The Waterspout of August, 1896. Nothing will more brilliantly illustrate the success with which our colleague has attacked atmospheric problems than his latest memoir, which is now being published in the monthly Weather Review on the Waterspout of August, 1896, about which I will say a few words. The lantern slide pictures that I am about to throw upon the screen are exact reproductions, without retouching, of photographs of this spout, which occurred on Wednesday, August 19, 1896, in Vineyard Sound, Massachusetts. It was fortunately photographed or accurately observed from at least six different points, south, southwest, west, and northwest of the spout itself, the principal views being those taken at Cottage City on Martha's Vineyard, which was about 5.5 miles southwest of the track of the spout. Fortunately, a small schooner was passing along between Cottage City and the spout, and as the views always include this vessel, its movement became the means of measuring the exact intervals of time. In order to derive the best results from these photographs, Professor Bigelow personally visited the location and made sufficient measurements to enable him to convert the apparent distances given by the photographs into angles and linear distances so that we are able to chart the position of the schooner and the waterspout from time to time during the 25 minutes embraced by the photographs. Three spouts were seen in succession, though it is probable that there was only one general whirl in the atmosphere moving slowly southeastward while the spout cloud appeared and disappeared. No photographs of its first appearance were obtained, but those of the second and third appearances are published as halftones in the monthly Weather Review for 1906 and are numbered as follows. Second appearance, A, 1:02 p.m. by Chamberlain at Cottage City, B, 1:03 p.m. by Coolidge at Cottage City, C, 1:08 p.m. by Hallett at Cottage City, D, 1:12 p.m. by Dodge at Vineyard Haven, E, 1:14 p.m. by Ward at Falmouth Heights, F, 1:17 p.m. by Coolidge at Cottage City, G, 1:17 p.m. by Coolidge at Cottage City. Third appearance, A, 1:20 p.m. by Chamberlain at Cottage City, B, 1:24 p.m. by Chamberlain at Cottage City, C, 1:27 p.m. by Coolidge at Cottage City. By reducing the measurements made on the photographs to linear dimensions, Professor Bigelow arrives at the following figures, which will interest you because they are certainly the first that have ever been determined accurately for any waterspout. The diameter of the waterspout at sea level was 240 feet, its smallest diameter midway between this and the cloud, 144 feet. At its summit, or the lower surface of the cloud, the diameter was 840 feet. The approximate length of the tube, or height from the ocean to the lower surface of the cloud, 3,600 feet. The height of the top of the cloud above its own base was 12,400 feet, and its total height above the ocean level was 16,000 feet. The spray or cascade of drops forming a cloudy or smoky appearance at the base of the spout was 720 feet in diameter, and the height of the summit of this cascade was 420 feet. As a small vessel is visible in the middle of some of these pictures, I will add that the distance from the photographic camera at Cottage City to the waterspout was 5.75 miles, but the distance to the schooner was only 2 miles. The movement of the waterspout from the northwest to the southwest was at the rate of about 1.10 miles per hour. The rate of the schooner was 1.7 miles per hour. The wind was very light at the time, as stated by several observers, and as shown by the smoothness of the water. Meteorological observations are rather scanty, but from the best information at hand, Professor Bigelow finds the average temperature of the air at sea level at the place of the spout was 67.5 degrees Fahrenheit, or the maximum for the day. And the thermograph for Nantucket also shows that the spout occurred at the time of maximum temperature. On the other hand, the temperature at the land stations fell rather rapidly to 56.5 degrees at Vineyard Haven and 59 degrees at Woods Hole, so that the effective temperature within the anticyclonic wind that prevailed around the outside of the cloud, or at a distance from the spout, was about 58 degrees. The barometric pressure in this outside region was about 30.10 inches, but it must have been about 30.05 near the waterspout. The relative humidity was low at the meteorological station. The lower strata of the atmosphere were drier than any other day of the month, and after several trial computations, Professor Bigelow accepts a relative humidity of 64% as prevailing in general near the surface of the water at the time the waterspout was formed. These are the meteorological data at sea level beneath the cloud which surmounted the waterspout. This cloud was a large cumulonimbus with its flat base about 3,600 feet and above sea level, as just stated in connection with the length of the tube. With these meteorological data and the thermodynamic equations, Professor Bigelow computes the conditions in the air ascending in a rapid whirl within the center of the tube. The preceding dimensions, computed trigonometrically, have been quoted as measured from the photographs, but the figures deduced from thermodynamic theory in Professor Bigelow's tables are as follows. The height of the base of the cloud, or the dry stage of the ascending air, should be 3,537 feet, or 63 feet less than the 3,600 measured on the photograph. The cloud stage extends thence upward for 5,669 feet, or to a total height of 9,206 feet. Here the freezing or hail stage begins, which is comparatively thin layer of only 243 feet, and therefore ceases at a total height of 9,449 feet. Above this all, precipitation is in the shape of snow or minute crystals, certainly not hail or frozen water drops, and the thickness of this layer, 6,765 feet, brings us to the top of the cloud at 16,214 feet, or about 5,000 meters above sea level. The agreement of these thermodynamic computations with trigonometrical measurements is quite satisfactory. Now, the motion of the air depends essentially upon the change of pressure or the gradient. An abnormal horizontal gradient will produce horizontal motion or whirlings, but a vertical gradient will produce rising or falling motion of the air. Only a short distance from the waterspout over the island of Nantucket proper, the vertical gradient corresponded to a fall of 0.098 inch for each ascent of 100 feet, whereas the temperature and moisture conditions over the water near the spout give a vertical gradient of 0.101 inch per 100 feet. This small difference of 0.003 inch per 100 feet corresponds to a total difference of 0.11 inch between sea level and the cloud base 3,600 feet above. It is this difference of pressure that is the effective gradient for vertical movement, causing the air at the outer boundaries to slowly descend while the air within the tube rapidly ascends. The main part of Professor Bigelow's memoir is devoted to explaining numerically each step in the formation of the spout and its linear and vertical motions over Vineyard Sound. From this special study, he is led to investigate the whole question of the condition attending any overturning that may occur in the atmosphere. If a layer of cold air be spread over a layer of warm air, resting quietly upon it with the help of an intervening diaphragm, and the latter be removed, we all know that the cold air must descend and the warm air rise, a process of overturning such as is occurring every day in the atmosphere. Mechanical conditions or mechanical theory of this upsetting were recently worked out by Margulies, and his views, with some important modifications, are developed by Professor Bigelow in such a way that a certain conclusion is inevitably reached. This overturning takes place not merely in a small way, as in a thunderstorm, but on the grandest scale in tropical hurricanes. Now, the question has been discussed pro and con for 100 years as to whence comes the energy involved in the production of the rapid rotary winds of hurricanes.